in lieu of the proceedings that have in some ways concluded, but in other ways just begun, there are a couple of verses of scripture that I'd like to share with you, and I'm not going to expound on them much at all. Just let you think about what they mean with respect to what has happened and what and where we find ourselves. And this is from the book of Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter, and I'm reading verse 3 and 4, and this is a newer version of the King James. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live. And afterward they join the dead. Anyone who is among the living has hope, and even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. Let us pray. Eternal God, our Father, beneficent, merciful one, the one God to whom praise is due forever, we beseech your blessings upon this group of people that come once again seeking justice in our lifetimes. Grant that all that we do and say here is pleasing in your sight and is guided by your spirit of wisdom and truth. Bless our efforts as we try to make a difference in this place, in this time, in trying to bring about something that people don't know about in the United States, and that's justice. Let us continue to be strong and work together. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
The one God to whom all praise is the attitude, the Lord of the worlds. I bear witness that there is but one God. And I bear witness that Moses, I bear witness that Jesus, I bear witness that Muhammad are his messengers. It is in their names that I greet you. With the greeting words of peace, we say it in the Arabic language. As-salamu alaykum. For those unfamiliar with these words, of course, they mean in English, peace be unto you. And since not a single of the prophets spoke English, then we should know that the language of that expression is a language, though unfamiliar to many of us, but a language very familiar to the prophets of God. This language of peace is unusual in this hour of our lives. Of course, we are here making a call for justice when peace has been broken. And the reason the language of peace is so unusual in our lives is that those that we thought were responsible peacekeepers, we now know very clearly, have often been most responsible for breaking the peace. On this week, we were able to claim a victory in the first round of a long fight. For we sat in a courtroom and witnessed 2 weeks or so of testimony. One of the longer preliminary hearings than I'm aware of. In fact, those that understand the legal process would say to us that a traditional preliminary hearing is the prosecution offering enough evidence to bind over a court case for a criminal trial. It is there that the prosecution is to lay out enough evidence that the county or the state is justified in utilizing the state resources to pursue a charge against an accused individual. Since we live in a land that alleges to offer every citizen the idea or the preposition that one is innocent until proven guilty. The system now affords the accused the right to remain silent while the accuser must produce enough evidence to even have a trial. So if I accuse you of some wrong deed, that doesn't mean in U.S. law we have a trial. I can't just speak it from my mouth and say you've done it. I am responsible for bringing, or the state is, enough evidence to justify taking your time, taking my time, taking the public's time and resources to consider the charge as relevant. So in this phase that we have now witnessed, it wasn't on the defense in a technical way to present its case. Generally, the case of the prosecutor is introduced in the preliminary phases, and most occasions the defense lay back with the presumption of innocence and say to the prosecutor, you prove it, I don't need to say anything. Right. If you can get me to court, lay out your evidence. But on this occasion, I think the entire world already knows that the prosecutor had very serious evidence against Johannes Mezelin. And as we witnessed these days, we discovered that not only did the prosecutor have very serious evidence against Johannes Mezelin, but he had very serious evidence against Johannes Mezelin and every officer of BART that testified. So we went to court and are in court to demand justice. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the great teacher of Minister Farrakhan, spoke these words. He said that justice is a common thing, yet it is elusive. This is especially the case when those accused of injustice are responsible for bringing justice. Very difficult to pin down a law enforcement officer for an act of injustice. This is because, as I learned from a great scholar of law a few days ago, that in the law there is a functional presumption that the law enforcement officer is right. So the chief of police, when you make a complaint, assumes that his officer is right. They are partners who work in internal affairs. They are officers themselves. So their mind is inclined to the idea that their friends are right. When officers respond to a call and see their brother in blue in conflict, their first reaction is to go to the aid of their brother in blue, because the presumption in that setting is my brother in blue is right. Well, this preliminary hearing has been eye-opening in more ways than one. For as we have sat and watched the defense attempt to muddy up the waters of truth in this case, in truth, it appeared as though every time Attorney Raines brought a witness to the stand, that witness that he brought shoved a boot down Mr. Raines' mouth. And it was frustrating to him. Because no matter what those officers said, the video continually demonstrated another story than what the officers would speak. So this justice, which is common yet elusive, elusive because the system that we entrust to protect our justice is inclined to protect itself. So the victim of injustice is victimized by some element of the system, finds themselves at odds with the system itself. So as I'm reading the news reports, there was a reporter sitting behind us in the courtroom, and she decided during break, she would ask me, what do you think about the coverage? I looked at her and I didn't know who she wrote for. In fact, she was very specific. She said, what do you think about the Chronicle coverage? And I looked at her and said, well, in general, I'll tell you off the top that the Oakland Tribune is one of the worst papers in existence in covering the affairs of our community. Then I said that we would never know the magnitude of what's happening in this courtroom by what's being reported generally in the press. A prime example that still exists is that in this trial that we have witnessed, you all remember Mr. Mark Furman and the O.J. Simpson trial? In the O.J. Simpson trial, O.J.'s defense team wanted to make a demonstration that law enforcement officers don't mind setting you up and don't mind lying against you in a court of law. And so they brought out Mr. Furman for a testimony because there had been some evidence that Johnny Cochran and his team said or made the case had been tampered with. Some evidence that had been corrupted and some evidence that had been contaminated. That was O.J. Simpson's defense. And he made his case by bringing in Mr. Furman and proving Mr. Furman as a liar. So I believe, I forget the attorney's name, the elderly, Shapiro. F. Lee Bailey. Famed attorney. And he asked Mark Furman, in words, do you or have you ever been one that uses the N-word in the public? And Mr. Furman said very self-righteously, oh no, not me. I would never. Now here, he'd done some sort of tape interview using the N-word, and Mr. Bailey would have never asked him if he didn't have tape. And he gave him about 5 opportunities to clear up what he was saying. Now, I don't use the N-word very often, me, Brother Keith. But there might be an occasion where the expression slips, generally in anger with someone acting like a slave. So it might slip out in that kind of moment of passion. Well, when we arrived and heard testimony, first, Officer Anthony Peroni, who was a key witness for the defense. In fact, if I recall, he spent more time in testimony than anyone else in the trial. Thus far, the preliminary hearing. Well, we already have heard and reported here that Officer Peroni was brutal from the time he arrived at the BART platform. That Officer Peroni, before speaking a word to any of the alleged suspects, in fact, I don't think they ever actually raised to the level of suspects in what he was doing. We can, at best, call them detainees. For when Officer Peroni arrived to the platform, no one ever pointed out these young men and said, those young men
were in a scuffle, a fight, a riot. Nothing. Officer Baroni arrives with a call that, as we have already shared with you, that there was an allegation of a fight between a group of black males and a white male on the train. But the call never mentioned the white male. The call only mentioned the black males. So when Mr. Baroni arrives, he doesn't arrive looking to bring justice. He arrives looking to thump somebody. So he arrives, maybe in a fit of steroid rage, and has his taser with a laser pointed at a group of young men. They react to him. That is pointing a laser taser on their persons. Two of them avoid him and get back on the train. Four of them stand and fuss at him, for he had no reason to point a taser at them in the first place. Since when did a taser become an investigative tool? That would be torture. Speak, or I'm going to shock you. Tell me what I want to know before I bring you electricity. Did you do it, and why didn't you just waterboard it? That's not the use for a taser. And so Mr. Baroni then goes to the train and meets a very cooperative Oscar Grant III. Even though he approached them with taser in hand, he said, "Get off," and Oscar got off. He takes them to the area where his friends were sitting and tells them to sit down, and when Oscar asks him a question or has dialogue with him, which is lawful, by the way, yes, you have a right to talk to the police. Is that true?
Yes.
When he doesn't like Oscar questioning him, he tells him, and I think, sit the F down. Well, Oscar then sits down. He goes back on the train, grabs Brother Michael. After threatening him and cussing him, and when pulling him off the train, throws him into a wall. Now, in the meantime, his officer partner, Dominici, in her testimony, is saying openly that these men were not searched. They had potential to have weapons. Well, as the events are unfolding, and as Baroni is beginning his brutalizing of the young men, at a certain point, he becomes exceedingly verbally abusive. And while Oscar is on his knees, he jumps in his face while Mr. Mezzali is back to his right, or near to his right, and says in the face of Oscar Grant on videotape, "We're in church and I want to be very respectful," but he used the B word, the A word, and the N word in rapid fire succession, and jumps in Oscar's face and says, "B-A-N, right? You all know what those letters stand for? B-A-N, right?" Mezzali, seeing the fervor of his brother in blue, who's shouting down Oscar nose to nose, takes Oscar and they drag him face down to the ground. And then, out of joy, Mr. Baroni says, "Yeah!" Now, all of this is on tape. And when the attorney, the DA, asked Mr. Baroni, "We're going to play a tape and you tell us if you hear your voice here. Do you hear yourself saying B-A-N? "Oh, I would never say such a thing." Well, let's listen to it. "B-A-N, yeah. Now, did you hear your voice?" "You see, I think I said the B word." Well, Did you say the next word? I don't know. In words, let's hear it again. B-A-N, yeah. Did you use the A word? I did. Did you use the N word? Oh, I would never use it, but that's not the type of language I use. That man used that kind of language as soon as he got to the platform. So to now testify that's not the type of language that I use, he's trying to now justify himself as a decent human being, and I've yet to see in his testimony anything decent about it. That's Officer Anthony Corona. Now the whole world now has in his testimony that he shouted Oscar down, saying the B, the A, and the N word in rapid succession, and then he almost could have got up and high-fived his partner for throwing him down on his face. Then he began to testify that our brother Oscar was resisting arrest while laying face down. Turned out they laid him down over the leg and foot of one of his friends. They said that Oscar's hands were in front of him. He was laying on top of his brother's leg. Peroni testified he kept squirming. Well, you threw me down on top of my brother's leg, and his friend and brother said it on the tape. He's on my leg. So what they call active resistance was the fact they couldn't lay him flat down because they laid him on top of his brother's leg, so he's moving. And they picked him up and moved him, or he pulled his leg back and they moved him. They declared that this was active resistance. Now, in the meantime, 250-pound steroid-raged Anthony Peroni, if you saw him, you would know what I'm saying about the steroid rage. Now, I can't verify he's on steroids. Maybe he should hire Mr. Rains to defend his case about what drugs he's on. Barry Bonds did. Now, he's laying on top, not laying, knees on top of Oscar, face or hand, holding down his face. He's not just holding him down because, as I understand it, it produced a swelling of Oscar's face, so his face is jammed to the ground by the weight of a 250-pound officer on his shoulders, neck, and head, while another approximately 230-240-pound officer on the other side of his body, and they testified that Oscar was so strong that they could not get his hands in control. And of course, the district attorney, Stein, was able to show video footage of Oscar's hands laying flat behind his back in a handcuffing position. But as this case unfolded, I think the judge spoke very well of what we all already knew. And that was that, in fact, he said this was not a case of video evidence. Though the video, in his words, do offer explanation so we know how it happened. And he said, in essence, that he appreciated learning the sequence of events from the video. But he said the real matter here was state of mind and intention. He shared with us that in the burden of law to bring a charge of murder, you only needed to know two things. One, had someone been killed? That was obvious. Two, was there malice involved? The district attorney, in his closing argument, shared with us that in law, malice does not mean I don't like somebody. I'm angry with somebody. It does not represent some feeling of hatred toward the target or who has been murdered. But that malice only represents in law intention. Did I intend to shoot or kill this person? After witnessing days of video, the defense brings out an alleged video expert. And the alleged video expert, his claim to expertise was that he could increase the lighting so we could see a little better. And that he could splice together in words all these videos and evidence so that we would have an actual time congruence from the various cameras so that we could see the same event from a variety of angles in real time at the same time. So we looked up on the monitor and here were four or five different camera angles being displayed. That was the video expert's expertise. The problem was the defense attempted to use him to offer a non-credible explanation of what the human reactions and actions on the video meant. He attempted to interpret the video.
Look, Mr. Grant's shoulders are at a 30-degree angle off the ground. He was rotating counterclockwise.
Well, he offered that in an attempt to explain that Oscar's shoulders being off the ground for a split second was consistent with resisting arrest, when in truth it was consistent with the fact that a 250-pound man just got off of it. Now, if a 250-pound man sat on your head and shoulders and got up, would you move or would you stay flat down like a pancake? See, it doesn't even make sense to suggest that he would just lay flat down like a pancake because 500 pounds of two men had just relieved him of their body weight of course he moved. Would you? If you're conscious, you'll move. They tried to explain that Oscar's bodily motions were all signs of resistance. In fact, he said, look, his knee is at a 40-degree angle. That's evidence that he was trying to escape. And so the judge finally grew tired of the foolishness. Stop. Mr. Raines got a little upset. Judge, you're handcuffing me. We need to handcuff Mesley. He should come in there each day in chains, in an orange suit. You're not allowing me to defend my client. You've been defending him longer than any other preliminary hearing. The judge said, in essence, stop trying to explain to me what I see in the video. I see what I see. Next witness. In fact, he said, you've got 1 minute. Do you have any more questions, Mr. Raines? There's no more questions. Fine. DA, you got a chance to ask a question. You don't have no question? Fine. You all stop wasting my and everybody else's time to do what you're attempting to do. Let's put it in the mouth of Anthony Peroni. I think he described what we saw on video probably better than anybody else in comparing the video to their words. When they showed the video, as Anthony Peroni was alleging that Oscar Grant kicked him in the groin, an allegation he didn't make the night after the incident. He didn't make a report on January the 1st that morning saying that he kicked me. He didn't make a report, I believe, the next interview in March. He didn't say that he kicked me. His lawyer told him that I saw a video and you need to say that he kicked you. So when they showed a video angle that Peroni was unfamiliar with, he hadn't seen perhaps this video before. And he broke it down and said, okay, Mr. Peroni, show us when you get kicked. Well, there's no kicking on the video. There is footage of Mr. Peroni grabbing the back of Oscar's head and pulling him downward. Now, if you heard how he handled Oscar's friend, you would know he likes to throw people down. At the beginning of his testimony, he very arrogantly boasted on what he called a hair pull down of Michael Greer. So yeah, I didn't grab him in the back of the head. I grabbed him on the side of the head. And I pulled down while putting my knee behind his knee, and he went straight down. He was very proud of the way he threw Michael Greer around. He was very proud of the way he was pulling Oscar Grant down. And when he pulled him downward, since they could not find any kicking on the video, this man blurts out without question on it. The defense attorney didn't even think of it. Peroni thought this line up all by his lonesome. He's looking at the video. He pulls Oscar down. Oscar puts his hands in front of him, which is a natural defensive act, so you don't fall on your face. And he said, look, he was reaching for my gun. It was such a far out statement. I don't even think Mr. Raines followed that up with any fervor, because now Peroni is obviously lying, which is why in his closing remarks, the judge stated, not in those words, he didn't say, Peroni came in here and lied. He did say, I don't know if I can trust the testimony of Anthony Peroni, who was the only one who said that he heard Johannes Mezzali say, back up, I'm going to tase it. And he is one who also was told by Johannes Mezzali after murdering Oscar Grant, I thought he had a gun. I think we all already know, if you've got 500 pounds on top of somebody and you think that they have a gun, guess what? You don't let them go. If I thought you had a gun and your hands are out of my control or beneath you, and I'm fearing that you're going to reach for that gun, I don't let you go. Why? Because if you've got free hands, you can grab the gun. Make sense? So what law enforcement practitioner would think that a suspect has a gun and stand up and try to load up your taser? If you think that a suspect has a gun, then you keep them under your control. They were a half a dozen officers on the platform. We could say, gun. And that would alert other officers to come and remove the gun. You don't get up and reach for a taser if you thought you saw a gun. That's why not one, but two judges have made it known in the public record that BART officers are lying and making up stuff. And so we're thankful that the judge saw what we all saw and said in the public record, I'm not certain that I can trust what Peroni said. He said there's no doubt in his mind that Johannes Mezzali intended to shoot Oscar Grant with a gun and not with a taser. And he took as the only record of state of mind, since Mr. Mezzali would have had to speak to his state of mind, he took evidence of a witness who had both video and visual testimony that when Johannes Mezzali murdered our brother, that he handled his weapon the way that a gun is intended to be handled. When an officer fires a taser gun, it doesn't have the power of a gun. A gun has kickback. So the officer is trained to handle that weapon, to manage the kickback. So they've got two hands on the weapon. Their feet are positioned a certain kind of way, that they can respond to the natural power of that weapon, because if you don't handle it properly, you hit yourself with the gun. So they're trained to stand, shoulders, arms, hands, a specific way to deal with a firearm that absolutely differs from the way that a taser has to be managed. You can manage a taser almost like a hair dryer. It's an electric device. It has power in it, but it doesn't require that kind of careful use to control it. So when he claimed that he was reaching for a taser, that's just an excuse that was given days later. So the judge was able to glean from the evidence that was clear that one of the videographers, an Asian brother, who really did not seem so pleased to testify in a way that might prove the police wrong. He was hesitant. You know how some of us just want the police to be right?
Yeah.
I think that's what our brother Ramsey was saying to us, Sister Ramona, the other night. That there's a presumption that the police officers are just right all the time. And that presumption goes right through the trial. It's a weight that goes with members of the jury because, you know, you're an American if you're a citizen. And you really want to believe that the system that you live in will produce what is right. Don't you want to believe that about where you live? You want right to prevail. So since the system exists, the hope is that the system will do the right thing. But you know, maybe that's why we don't pray to the president. Do you? You might pray for the president, but you don't pray to the president. He's the head of this system, governmentally. You don't pray to him because, quite frankly, whoever is president, governor, mayor, supervisor, council person, minister, pastor, we all have limitations. Is that true? Is that true, Pastor? Can I say that?
That's real. That's real.
You're not perfect, are you?
No, sir.
But you're the archbishop. But it doesn't mean perfect archbishop. So given these limitations, if we place all of our trust for justice in a system that has severe limitations, it is severely limited when we need the testimony of men like Anthony Baroni in any courtroom is limited. When you require the testimony of Ms. Dominici is limited. Since they are exceedingly limited and they've proven it in the courtroom, Ms. Dominici ran to the BART platform and alleged that she fought a crowd of 40 people to reach Baroni and Oscar Grant and his friends, and just by chance, that BART video they told us they didn't have a good picture of, I think we were told that the picture was so grainy that they had to go and buy new cameras at Fruitvale BART. Didn't we hear something like that? Well, we didn't need, you know, pristine images. This wasn't a movie. This is a real day-to-day life struggle. We needed some basic information. When Ms. Dominici testified that she ran past 40 people to reach Anthony Baroni while he was detaining Oscar Grant and his friends, she said it was so chaotic that as she was running toward them, that she thought she was going to have to shoot somebody. The judge asked her, who are you going to shoot? And then the DA said, well, let's look at this chaos on the platform that you were so amped up with. That's where the BART cameras came in. She got off the escalator or the steps. Nothing but her and the camera. She was 30 or 40 yards back, or 50. And she's running. Now, she just testified she was ducking and dodging the crowd, trying to get through the chaos, so that by the time they reached Officer Peroni and Oscar and his friends, that she just thought this was war zone. By the way, the only war zone came out of the mouth of Peroni. That was the only war zone going on here. So now, as this case continues, we gained a victory in round one.
Round one.
We don't know what round two is going to bring. Mr. Raines has already argued that this case should be taken out of the county. And check out his argument. I read it in the paper this morning. He said it's not about the jury. That's not what concerns him, is what he said. He said what concerns him is not one, but two judges. Have in essence said, your defense is based on a lie. Well, I thought judges had that authority. That's what they're there for. When a man said, I thought he had a gun, and I reached for my taser, the judge was right. That's inconsistent. By the way, you didn't say anything, Mr. Mezzali. So you didn't even offer a defense. You should have just went straight to trial and offered your defense there. Which was the primary issue that the judge raised, was that the only way to change Mezzali's state of mind would be for us to know it, is to have Mr. Mezzali on the stand saying what he thought. He said, no one else can tell us his state of mind. He wanted to bring in one of Oscar's friends to speak to his state of mind, but the judge was very clear. The fact that he said, oh my God, and others heard him say it did not mean that this was an accident. Did you know that law enforcement officers, if they shoot and kill somebody or give them counseling, because that's a horrific event. If you're a decent human being, you don't just want to kill people, even if it is within the prayer view of your job. So an officer in a justified shooting that shoots somebody, they give him counsel. BART offered Johannes Mezzali a counseling friend, another officer who rolled with him for days, who spent five or more hours with him after the shooting. And not once did Johannes Mezzali say to his hired companion, who took him to see his attorney in Sacramento and back, that's 3 hours on the highway, who sat with him for 5 hours after the shooting, who was probably there every time they attempted to question Johannes Mezzali. And Johannes Mezzali never told his hired law enforcement companion, I thought I pulled my taser. So the DA's case was, if this were an accident, then Johannes Mezzali wouldn't be silent. Then Johannes Mezzali would be very loud. And as Uncle Bobby said in one of the days at the conclusion of the day to the press, that if Johannes Mezzali really felt as you say he feels, then he and his family would have reached out for the family of Oscar Grant to give their condolences, to make their apologies, and to accept responsibility for what had happened. Of course, they've done none of the above. So now we're concerned going into round two that this trial is not taken out of the county. We had an interesting meeting with Alameda County Sheriff about the procedures in the courtroom. And I have to say, I want to commend Brother Tony and all of the others, the Bay Area Revolution Group and others that have been out on the corner every day with the banners, with the megaphones. Now, why do y'all scare the sheriff so much? They scared the sheriff with this thing called freedom of speech. The sheriff is terrified that in the course of a day that 100 people have said, right on, brothers, good going. We support you. That's what's happening out there, right? The sheriff is terrified by the fact that there's a few banners out, a few posters out, of people who want to see justice served in the murder of Oscar Grant. So that when we walk into the courtroom, I told the sheriff, along with our council person Brooks, who's here with us this afternoon, give her a big round of applause. To arrange the meeting. Because members of Oscar's family and friends had been denied the right to sit in observance of the proceedings. That one particular bailiff was so overbearing that any young men that came into that courtroom would be challenged by the bailiff. So apparently the day we went for Caravan for Justice 3, we want to thank you for your support of our movement. Oscar's friends sit down and maybe they whisper or something. I don't know if they did anything. Coughed. They coughed. That was the cough drop day. Young man takes a cough drop that his mother handed him because he coughed. Now there's a sign up that says no eating, no chewing, no drinking, no talking. It might say no sleeping, but it does not say no coughing. And no taking medication for the cough. She's so excited about the idea that young people want to see justice secured that she stands up and not just puts one out, but puts two of them out. And only one of them coughed.
She kicked him out 2 days in a row.
And kicked him out 2 days in a row. So we thank our council person for arranging a meeting with the sheriff about how the courtroom was being secured. We're not opposed to having the courtroom secure. For Sister Tosco had been there every morning at 6, 7 in the morning waiting to get in. And until we challenged them, they left no mechanism for allowing for peaceful entry. Getting in some days was so difficult. There's a woman, a senior citizen, must be 80 years old, so livid with anger because apparently she's a friend of Mr. Raines or Mr. Mezzily, that if she couldn't find favoritism getting in before these 20 seats are filled, did she threaten you, Brother Jack? Is it on video? We don't have no video evidence. But the point is, there's a big crowd trying to get in. There's members of the press working their way in. While the family, we've been very blessed that there's enough of us there. Brother Jack has been like the chief of security. And saying to those that are waiting to get in, this is the Grant family. Let them in. But I noticed no one ever had to say, this is the Mezzily family. Let them in. You know why? They were already in. And every day we went, when we got into the courtroom, on the left-hand side was the Mezzily family, friends, security, and press. Left-hand side was full. right-hand side were the seven members of the Grant family. Every day we went in and saw this. It had the appearance that no white people other than the press ever stood in line to get in. That when we got in, all white people were already in. They were seated to the right. And we, who are not all black, but those of us that support justice for Oscar Grant, all went to the left, to the right. I'm sorry. Well, maybe that's good symbolism.
That's right.
It was good we went to the right, and they went to the left. Now, every break, the judge didn't take lunch breaks. He wanted to get this thing done by midday, early afternoon, so we took 15-minute breaks. Every break was a Plessy versus Ferguson moment. This door is for Mezzalese people first. Let Mr. Mezzaly out, his family, their security, their attorneys. You people, sit down. Now here, you have an aggrieved family. They can't even get to the restroom in an equal way.
Oh, sit down.
Then after Mezzaly and his people are out,
oh, Grant family.
Then after the Grant family is out,
rest of you supporters of the Grant family, Stacy,
press, and Mezzaly's one or two friends may now exit. Every break, every day, saw Mr. Mezzaly and his support network have more time for the restroom, for water, for comfort, for relaxation, for recovery than all the black folk in the courtroom when we were there as the majority every day, until our counsel person arranged a meeting with the sheriff. The sheriff initially feigned ignorance. We say there's an officer in the courtroom that has thrown out members that support the Grant family 2 days in a row. Well, what's the officer's name? We don't know. She's a female officer, though. Now, stop right there. This is a high-profile trial. It's got a press conference every day. They don't get more high profile than this one. As the judge said, this was the first peace officer to his knowledge in the state of California that had gone to trial for 187 murder. That's what this is big. Now, given how big it is, surely the sheriff knows who's on the case. Well, it was the same fellas every day. There was the jovial, heavyset man who came in every day since there was no way to line people up to get in. He'd come in and say, excuse me, partner, you see I haven't missed any meals. I need some room. Heavy D's in the house. And he'd make a joke about himself and we'd move out the way so he could get through the door. And he'd come out and tell another joke about himself and he was fine. I'd rather have an officer trying to set a tense moment at ease than an officer to do what this officer did, which was throw these young men out for coughing. First, the sheriff feigned ignorance. And as we began to lay out for him the day-to-day procedures, some of which he had a dialogue with Councilperson Brooks, and what he told her and what he said in the meeting were conflicting. When she pointed it out to him, he gets defensive. In fact, he told us straight up that no matter what complaint you give, I never assume my officer is wrong or guilty. Did he say that, Sister Destiny? Now, you know how
There's a certain weight given to the testimony of a police officer. Generally, how the jury really wants to believe, we spoke about this a moment ago, that the officer's going to tell the truth. There's a certain weight that a police officer gets in testimony, true? Well, how much weight does a city council person get? Well, apparently with the sheriff, none. So the fact that the city council person is in the courtroom while the bailiff is throwing someone out without cause didn't carry much weight with him. He said, I never assumed that my officer is wrong. We had to wrangle with him to get him to the point of his accepting what I'll look into it. Well, he did evidently look into it. But you know, it was not without pressure. You've heard the saying that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. This was one of those moments. But for some reason, he got so comfortable with himself that when we were concluding our meeting, he said he would examine the procedures. We gave him advice, and they did in fact change the procedures to the credit of Councilperson Brooks, Supervisor Keith Carson's office, and those that went in to jam him. So the next time they come up, there's some level of line to get in as opposed to mob. And there's some dialogue a little different from the earlier dialogues about what the procedures would be for getting in. That was a result of a direct meeting. But the greatest result of that direct meeting was that female officer that had thrown out young men who only wanted to show their love for Oscar Grant by being present in a courtroom. That female officer was taken off the case and reassigned to another courtroom because, quite frankly, she couldn't handle the pressure. But that's not the case. The sheriff, before we were leaving, we're about to walk out. I think, Sister Destiny, were we about done with him when he got to that point? We chewed him up a little bit with enough evidence and information for him to make a decision to do the right thing. And we get ready to leave and listen to his words. Well, you know, to be quite frank about it is my greatest hope and dream that this trial be taken out of Alameda County. Huh?
Yeah, let's take him out of Alameda.
Even if you thought that, that shows a certain level of arrogance of power. I can say anything to anybody. That was his non-cussing Anthony Peroni moment. I can say anything to anybody. And Councilperson Brooks then challenged him. I know you didn't just say that in words. You must be losing your mind to just say that to the public. Then he opens up his mouth, takes off his shoe, and he starts stuffing it into his mouth. Because he followed it up by saying, I'm not talking to the public, I'm talking to you.
Who represents the public?
But not only that, that's almost like saying, I'm not talking to a human being. What is this man's state of mind? That he's talking to the council person, he's talking to a representative of the county supervisor's office, he's talking to a family, a member of the young men on the platform, he's talking to a local activist for the community, he's talking in front of one of his deputies, and he says, I'm not talking to the public, I'm talking to you. Councilperson Brooks gave him counsel. She told him, shut your mouth. Don't speak another word. You're digging a hole. And the more you speak, he sounded like Tony Peroni in the courtroom. See, he's reaching for my gun. Do you know what Peroni said in that courtroom? He said, I'm trying to justify what you see on that videotape. You know, justify rhymes with just a lie. And so, sisters and brothers, as I wind down, we go to round two. Round two is that Johannes Mezeli will be arraigned on the 18th of this month. In that arraignment, that means he will be formally charged with what the judge declared to be a 187A, I believe, which is murder. The degree of murder will be determined in a later date once guilt is pronounced by a jury. But Johannes Mezeli, by God's grace alone, will be tried for murder, and that trial begins on the 18th of June. And so as we move forward with our efforts, what demands now do we need to follow up on? We must follow up on Barbie. For its officers have proven themselves incapable of having the privilege. Being a police officer is not a right, it's a privilege. Of having the privilege of protecting the public. That job is both an honor and a privilege, but those officers on the platform that night have proven themselves dishonorable and have proven their dishonor in testimony. Lying and covering up to attempt to justify the actions of BART police on that evening. Miss Dominici said she was going to shoot somebody and didn't even have a target. She refused to testify that her partner was cussing everybody out, and he was proud himself to testify how he cussed everybody out. In fact, Miss Dominici would not even testify along with another officer that they heard a gunshot. They began to say things like, well, I heard a loud sound. I thought it was a taser malfunction, one of them said. That Peroni said that. A taser malfunction? What in the world does a taser malfunction sound like? And if you fire your weapon in training and regularity, you know what a gunshot sounds like. Miss Dominici hears a gunshot, and she said it was from 10 minutes to 10 hours before she even knew who had been shot. What kind of police officer are you? Oscar Grant was 10 feet from her. When she heard the gunshot, she didn't even look to see who had been shot. She said, I looked in the faces of the other officers and I didn't in words see alarm on them. So I knew it wasn't one of us. Okay? That means on the contrary, it was one of them. Since when has the line that demarks the difference between law enforcement officers and everybody else is us and them? A human life was taken. The first response of the takers of human life was the handcuffing. And then Mr. Raines had the nerve to argue that after he was shot, that Oscar Grant was still resisting arrest. They were worried he might still reach for a gun. He had just been shot and within moments would not be breathing. Look, sisters and brothers, every officer up there that testified untruthfully should be fired. If a judge can make a statement about your employee that I don't know if I can trust his testimony. How much longer ought that man to be an employee? They didn't fire Johannes Messick. They haven't fired Anthony Perone. They haven't fired the officer who didn't know who to shoot. When there was no fight, no scuffle, nothing that she saw, she thought she had to shoot somebody because she had to run 40, 50 yards on the platform.
Well, she had to kill somebody.
Exactly.
First degree murder.
Miss Dominici.
That's right.
Ran to the scene fearing she was going to have to kill somebody and testify to it. Which of them should work in law enforcement?
Man. Why? She said, because I would shoot them, kill them, if they didn't. They didn't do what I told them to do.
In fact, she testified, if Oscar had done what they told him to do, he would still be alive. When they were all asked, would you have done anything any differently? They all said no. And when asked, do you have any regrets? They all said no.
Wow.
Our only regret is that Bart hired any of these demons to work as law enforcement officers. Yes, sir, Jack.
Now, remember, Leslie's got to the scene at 2:09, and Oscar Grant was dead at 2:11.
Right, Oscar didn't live 2 to 3 minutes beyond the presence of Johannes Messick. The bulk of this time was the brutal acts of Anthony Perone. And when Messick arrives, Anthony Perone is brutalizing Oscar and his friends. And Messick joined in the lynch mob mentality and joined right in and used a mob attack mindset to throw Oscar face down to the ground, which prompted Anthony Perone to cheer, yeah!
What did he say before he said yeah?
We already said that. You missed it. I don't want to keep cursing in church. My mother might find out. Zach said he missed it. I'll send you the text message. We'll cuss on text. But sisters and brothers, we now must return to Bart. The oversight, ideas that they have paraded forth thus far are exceedingly weak. And the demands we make of Bart, if there is to be any dialogue with us, is that if there's an oversight that is citizen run, that civilian or citizen oversight board should have the type of power that any jury has to determine the guilt or innocence of an officer of the law. And if that guilt should be determined, then that citizen oversight board should have a task with guilt of wrongdoing, known mandated sanctions. The reason we're not so confident with the various models around the country is it is few and far between that you'll find an occasion where the Oversight Review Board has made a recommendation to a chief, a city manager, or a mayor where the chief, the city manager, or the mayor has actually fired or disciplined the officer. So the citizen review must have power, not a citizen group that meets an auditor once a year. That's too long. It's been 6 months since the murder of our brother. And to be 6 months away and Tony Perone still work for Bart in the same position. Miss Dominici still work for Bart in the same position. And were it not for videotape evidence, I believe that Johannes Messick would still work for Bart in the same position. And so, family, our efforts not only must continue, but they must increase. The filings that we've made for the recall of the district attorney are meeting glitches that would, I wouldn't say shock you, you shouldn't be surprised. After accepting 20 validated signatures, sending over to the Tribune publication of our intent, let me tell you what happened with that publication. That was done last Friday. We found it, we paid for it in the online system. I looked at and actually emailed some folk, you've seen it, a published online letter of intent. And after I filed it, I was out of town, so I wasn't in town when I made the transaction. I called the Tribune to ensure that what I sent had been received, and I called the registrar's office to ensure that what I have done is the acceptable method. Registrar's office said, sounds okay to me, just bring in what you have. Tribune didn't answer. When we go down with what we have to the registrar's office, they tell Sister Beatrice, who went down, that, well, that is not the form that we need. We need a form from the Tribune. When we went to the Tribune to get this particular form, they said, well, we didn't print it. Why? Well, I need to get a supervisor. This is the dialogue we have. Supervisor comes out and then says something that the sales system that sells you these ads doesn't say anywhere. And that was that you can't buy that particular type of ad online. That particular type of ad, you have to come in and do it in person and say it to me that if they published it, that they feared that they would be sued.
What?
That's what the supervisor said to me. Interesting, isn't it? Next day, I get a strange letter from the county of Alameda that I'm going to go through here. Seeking to challenge others for other reasons unrelated to this, but all of a sudden, the county brings an issue to my desk that made no sense at all. I just wonder, might the district attorney call around the offices just to try to lay pressure on those that would stand up against him and them? And so, family, today's town hall, we had to start it a little quicker and end a little briefer because the church is having an activity here. But I want to give time, Councilperson Brooks, if you want to share anything beyond what I've said, please receive our champion of City Hall, Sister Destiny Brooks.